everybody, and welcome to the Fortress Comic News episode 119. I am one of your hosts, Chris, alongside Mike.
No descriptor for me this week?
No.
Oh, okay. Just not feeling it?
No, I just forgot it until this exact moment.
I knew it. Damn it. Hey, everybody, you might want to stick around for the show. We have a very special guest, Mr. Kevin Eastman.
So excited.
The creator of Ninja Turtles, one of the creators.
Yeah, co-creator.
Co-creator is on the show today. Owner of Heavy Metal Magazine, if you're a fan of that. Yeah, and he's a great guy. So stick around. We're going to talk about that. I think, like, you know, looking up Kevin Eastman and stuff, my favorite part of, like, the whole origin of the Turtles is, like, how they named the Shredder.
Yeah.
Of, like, they're doing the dishes, picked up the cheese grater, and said, like, man, wouldn't the grater be a cool villain? Oh, my God. Can you imagine if it was the grater? Prepare to be grated.
I loved, we didn't have a chance to ask him because it was one of those ones where we're on a time crunch, but if you watch and look at his, there's a Nintendo controller in the way. If you look at his hat during the interview, the hat has the image of the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles that he did before they made the book. And it's one of my favorite images. I want that as a t-shirt.
Yeah, it's pretty dope. But anyways, welcome to the show. I'm sure Chris is going to talk about Detective Pikachu, I hope.
Fuck yeah, I am.
Hell yeah. Can't wait to hear about that.
Jam-packed show.
Let's get to the news then. Kind of not surprised by this TV news. The Tick is canceled after season 2.
Depressing.
Yeah, but it's weird, man. I don't think The Tick did well when it was originally a show. I mean, it's such a niche, or like such a small fan base, I feel like. It's just, I don't know.
Yeah, possibly. They tried a bunch of times. It's always like a cult classic thing.
Mm-hmm.
But this one was really good, and I wish more people gave it a shot, because especially the first season was awesome.
Yeah. And I feel like they were putting a lot into it, but alas, couldn't hold it, people's attention.
Yeah, I think Amazon was hoping for more, being the whole superhero.
It might turn into another cult classic. Like, I feel like people haven't even, you know, had a chance to figure out that this is on Prime. They'll see this pop up and be like, oh man, I binged that show. What happened to it? Okay, and we got a Batwoman trailer, over 3 minute long Batwoman trailer. The first half being no Batwoman at all.
No.
And the second half, we still don't get the final costume that we see in the CW crossover. She's like using Bruce Wayne's old costume.
Yeah, so this is going to be some sort of prequel to what happened in Elseworlds.
Right, yep. It's going to be an origin story, Chris.
Yeah, I can't wait. And then, but it's crossing over with Elseworlds. I'm sorry. Crisis on Infinite Earths. So,
right.
I don't know. Maybe they just showed us like the first couple episodes, and then they're gonna time jump. But
that'd be nice. Yeah. Get the origin down. Like, because they don't need to do an origin. I mean, they just brought the character in the crossover, and we're like, this is fine. Yeah. Oh, it's Bruce Wayne's cousin. Bam. That's it. I don't need to know how she found the suit. I don't need to see all that crap.
My only gripe about the trailer was one, seeing her in like just the Batman suit.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, like that didn't look good at all. And yeah, some of the dialogue was just like, all right, pandering, but whatever.
A lot of the stuff's very heavy handed of, yeah. We can tell. I know the agenda of the show.
So it looks good though. The action looked good. It seems like Ruby Rose, discovered how to act, so hopefully she'll be good. And I'm excited for it.
Yeah, I'll watch it. New Swamp Thing trailer. I didn't check that one out.
What do you think? Yes.
I'm going to watch that immediately after this.
So basically we get, we see kind of Swamp Thing, Alec Holland before he becomes Swamp Thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's him with Abby. We get a lot of the horror tropes going on, and we get this, like, they're going with the Alan Moore origin, it looks like, because it's Alec working in the swamp on this mm-hmm. kind of weird science thing, and then an explosion happens. So it looks like they're diving more into Alec in this one.
Yep.
And there's just, it looks like your classic kind of horror movie from this. So I think each trailer put together is showing us a different side of what's going on. I am so excited for this show.
This couldn't be, like, just thinking about it in the horror and stuff, this couldn't be so far from every comic book thing we've had in the last 3 years. You know what I mean? This has potential to be awesome.
Yeah, and this is what we always talk about Marvel does so well, is making genre films. Mm-hmm. In this case, it's a TV show. But, like, yeah, you don't want to do a superhero-y Swamp Thing TV show.
Mm-hmm.
It should be a horror-like show. Like, that's what Swamp Thing is. So I'm glad to see them go dive deep into the genre that fits well with this. It's only, like, what, a week away, 2 weeks away, so...
Yeah, very excited. Tonight is the series finale of Game of Thrones, episode 6.
Wiener, 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 wiener.
This season is so bad. I haven't talked about it at all. Probably the worst season that everybody knows. I mean, the writing, there's so many plot holes. And even you know this. I mean, the amount of people that go into making a show, especially like for Flash, I remember seeing that, like, and this isn't even the coffee incident that everybody saw in the news, like that they left a coffee cup in one of the shots. There should be people editing the show, and like as far as continuity with the dialogue, like I can't believe there's just these two guys writing the dialogue and nobody's fact checking it. Because like even for the Flash show, I remember Kevin Smith saying like there's someone's job to like analyze every scene and make sure like for continuity, like this gets done and this has to be put here and this has to be said. And it's like, I feel like there's just nobody doing that on the show.
It sounds to me like from an outsider's perspective, like this is being rushed.
Oh yeah. And I want to thank our Disney overlords for employing these two writers and probably pushing them along. They're like, okay, well you got to start writing this Disney thing. And they're like, well,
they got to go work on the far superior Star Wars. So,
right. And they probably were like, well, we'll give you $100 million if you just don't do another Game of Thrones season. They're probably like, what Game of Thrones show? That's exactly what's happening.
She nukes a town.
Yeah.
The little guy gets the throne. The end.
The end. Do we need to check this? No, just
do it.
Just do it.
They got Watchmen coming. HBO will be fine.
Yeah, I've been really disappointed in a lot of the fans have, but I just wanted to talk about that really quick. Movie news. You want to talk about this Batman Hush trailer? So, I mean, DC continuing what they've done in the past and had some great success with adapting comic book properties, besides The Killing Joke, we don't talk about that, but making them animated movies, and I'm sure this will be great. Hush is such a classic, great story. And
yeah, it looked cool. Hush mm-hmm. is a good story to do. I think it'll do well.
And then the big piece of news this week, I don't know, I kind of teetered back and forth with this. A lot of people, I mean, there's almost, I mean, my mom texted me about this, so it was like, it got to every crevice of everyone, this piece of information, of all the earth. It was Robert Pattinson is going to be the next Batman. And I don't think it's confirmed. It's between him and the guy who played Beast, the new Beast in the X-Men movies.
Which isn't much better a choice.
I don't know. I don't know if either of them are a better choice. I honestly haven't seen Robert Pattinson act in anything besides Twilight, but I know he said this. He made such a bazillion jillion dollars doing Twilight. And I mean, there's that fan base of like, I love it. 50-50 down the middle. It's like, this is a trash movie. But he has come out and said that he won't do another movie unless he likes the script or it has a really well written script. So he's made so much money that he's just going to make the movies he wants to make. That being said, if you ever get offered Batman, why the fuck would you ever turn it down? but I think the main point here is we're getting a young Batman.
I think we have... I have faith in Matt Reeves, because I'm a huge right. Planet of the Apes fan, and those movies were fantastic.
Yeah, but, we all do, yep.
I don't know how I feel about him trying to like really push the detective route of this whole thing. Like, yeah, Batman's a detective. Guess what he does very little of? Detective work. like, I was having a discussion with a friend, and he said to me, like, you know who the most famous detective of all time is? Sherlock Holmes. I've read a bunch of the books. He doesn't do a whole lot of detective work.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, we get it. He's a detective, but we don't need to... I don't think the movie should be a detective movie. But that being said, my issue here is the two people he's picking are both very tall, lanky people.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, like, Bruce Wayne, and maybe this is because I'm doing a Batman the Animated Series podcast at the time, but Bruce Wayne has always been, like, a linebacker. Broad yeah. shoulders, ripped to shit, like, not this tall, lanky dude who can, like, sneak around. So that's where my issue comes, is just the body build of these two guys do not fit the bill, in my opinion.
But mm-hmm. It's going to be the first time I've ever been the same age of an on-screen Batman, and it's happening a lot sooner than I thought.
Wait till you're older.
Yeah, I know. You too. But I don't know how I feel about it yet. I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
We'll see, because at the end of the day, if this is the choice and it goes through, I mean, what am I going to do, sign a petition? Okay, that does nothing. So just
there's a lot of them out there, though,
Chris. See how it comes out. Like, it's not the choice I want. I'll be honest, though, I've seen nothing this man has done in my life. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if he's a good actor or not. Maybe he's an amazing actor. Who knows? But... just from seeing pictures of him and knowing him, like, he just doesn't fit the bill for what I want for Bruce Wayne.
Unless they do like a Dick Grayson Batman.
See, the one that's been thrown around was him doing being Terry McGinnis, and that I am all for.
Yeah, now that makes sense. The build, the age, who knows? That would be perfect.
Yeah, so hopefully, maybe. Not going to happen, but okay.
Movies we watched. I didn't watch anything, but you watched one, huh?
Some I did. I
pretty big important movie.
I went and watched Detective Pikachu. So, all in all, I gave it like a 7 or 8 out of 10. I think it's a really good movie, and I recommend anyone that's a fan of Pokemon go see it. I don't know if this is going to convert people who aren't Pokemon fans. It's a very basic story. It doesn't really break any amazing ground story wise, but the CG is fantastic. Pretty much everything in that movie is CG, including the Pokemon, including most of the city, and it works. But what it does really well for me is it gave me that moment, and I was talking to our buddy Craig, who owns our comic shop, about this. And it gave me that Avengers moment where he grew up reading comics and everybody said, these are silly, these are stupid, no one cares. And then Avengers comes out and somebody finally took the source material serious and it became this huge thing. That's Detective Pikachu for me. Is I grew up, those games came out when I was 10 years old. I've played everyone that came out. I was into the anime, everything, and now somebody made a huge live-action movie starring Ryan Reynolds and a bunch of other people who are big-name actors and took the source material serious. And that's what I loved about it. It brought me so much joy as a fan of that IP more than anything. So I look forward to more. I know they're fast-tracking a sequel, but this is definitely going to be a... franchise moving forward, because they built a world and they're definitely going to take advantage of it.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm glad. It sounds like you enjoyed it a lot and I can't wait to watch it now. Right. But, you know, speaking of animated things coming to life on the big screen, you know, getting a lot of popularity, we have an awesome interview to get to with Kevin Eastman and his Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So, let's get him on the show. Ready to rock.
And with that, welcome back, everybody. I want to welcome a very, very special guest this week, a legend in the industry, Mr. Kevin Eastman. Welcome to the show, Kevin.
So nice to be here. In fact, I'm such a legend. My family, I make them call me the ledge, like Sting. You know, I'm the ledge. I'm Rodney Dangerfield. I got no respect here. I'm just
like, no respect. Well, you have our respect, Kevin. My first memory is watching Turtles cartoons and picking up the comics and stuff. And it's been such a huge part of everybody's lives and all that. But I mean, we've probably told it 1,000 times, but give us the abridged origin story, because we got some other stuff to talk about too. But
absolutely. Well, you know, first and foremost, thank you guys so much. And then, you know, for your support, that's why, you know, we're here on the 35th year. May 5th, 1984, we launched the first comic at the very small but awesome convention in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. So it's great to be here with you guys on our 35th anniversary month.
Not only yeah, year. That's awesome.
Nice.
Such a big milestone.
But we really started as a joke. Peter and I were sharing a little studio, submitting a lot of work, getting a lot of rejection letters for said submissions to try to get work. Being a big fan of Bruce Lee, I had this idea to make Peter laugh. I thought if Bruce Lee was an animal, what would be the silliest animal he could be? And that was a turtle. So I did the sketch of a turtle standing upright. He had the nunchucks, you know, Bruce Lee, woo, and nunchucks and a mask and this martial arts pose. And I told Peter it's going to be the next big thing, Ninja Turtle, you know, ha, ha, ha. And that was the sort of the spark, you know, bantering back and forth, trading drawings back and forth. We had a sketch of all four turtles evolved with a full-on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle logo. And we looked at it and we said, basically, yeah, this is the dumbest thing we've ever seen. but we loved it. It made us smile. It made us laugh. And we said, let's try to come up with a story that tells how these characters got to be the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And that was 35 years ago. Yeah.
Wow.
So you guys are creating this property, and if the stories I've read are true, in a kitchen, and that's why you called it Mirage Studios, is because everything was just a mirage. What was the day when they came to you and wanted to buy it and basically made you guys filthy rich, or however that went down? What was that day like when the licensing started to come in and Nickelodeon started making the cartoons?
So they backed up the dump truck full of money, Scrooge McDuck style, and just
yeah,
sort of
right?
poured it.
That's my idea of it. Yeah, I think that's how it works. There's no taxes involved, right? They just dump a truck of
no
money.
Taxes,
no.
No, basically, when the evolution was, when we borrowed some money from an uncle and a little early, you know, family related crowdfunding. We raised $1,200 to print the first issue of 3,000 copies. And when it was released in May of 84, we were thinking, like, you know, man, if we could sell a couple hundred of these, it would be awesome. We could start to pay back some of the people we borrowed money from. But it's, you know, it started selling, knock on wood, and it kept selling. And so even though we were still cooking lobsters and doing odd jobs and still trying to work, this book sort of started us down a path that we hadn't planned on, hadn't really expected. With the evolution of the request by fans for the second issue, what was amazing was the second issue jumped from 3,000 in the first issue to 15,000 in the second issue, and that actually allowed us to not only pay off the earlier loans, but also fund the next issue. And so we, in January of 1985, started drawing comic books as a full-time career, funding our self-publishing efforts. And that's
awesome.
Ultimately for us, when the dream came true, we were drawing, telling stories like we dreamed to be a Jack Kirby when we grew up kind of thing. And it was relatively fast from there. I mean that in the most bizarre and sincere sense, in that, you know, in 1984, 1985, we're drawing full-time. By 1987, we'd been approached by a lot of agents and said, hey, we think this can be much more than a just a comic book. We think it could be a kid's toy and animated series. And we thought that was the funniest thing we'd ever heard. We were like, we said, this thing is barely working as a comic book. I don't see
right.
a leap into that. you know, mass media, everything. Because, you know, we owned and controlled all aspects of the Turtles, which many of the legends that inspired us before didn't have control over the characters that they created. Mm-hmm.
What was that like for you? I mean, the toys and then the movies, obviously, like, what's it like to see your creations coming to life like that? It's got to be awesome.
It's sort of a very surreal in the sense that even when we, you know, started working on the animated show and the toys kind of at the same time, there was still always a great sense of this is never actually going to go that far. It's like we were being sort of tricked or punked or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we're going to go down this path for a while and go, we were just kidding. We were really going to make toys or things of this. But when you first see when you first see them emerge and grow and the sculptures and the first animation tests and all that stuff come through, it's one thing. But then when you finally see, you know, your show listed in TV Guide, you know, right. It's going to be aired.
Yeah.
That was pretty mind blowing. Seeing your toys in a toy store for the first time was mind blowing. That they actually, you know, were made in China and shipped across the ocean and in Massachusetts, you know, in a KB toy store. You know?
Right. Cool. Oh man, that's
And you having that experience, knowing that you actually own your characters, being able to reap the benefits and do all this great stuff, was that kind of the impetus of what brought about Tundra Publishing and you wanting to do more with creator-owned, helping other people with creator-owned projects?
That was definitely that was really the dream behind Tundra, which was similar to, with what the Beatles did with Apple Records, which is to give, you know, not only existing creators the chance to create something original that they would own, that they wouldn't have to, give away, you know, part or all of their rights by working for another company, a larger corporation, and to also give projects a chance that might never be funded otherwise or never have the opportunity to see the light of day. You know, back in those days, it was, you know, pre-internet, all kinds of wonderful social media and exposure, but that was really the plan behind Tundra, was to sort of give back to the community that had treated me so well and try to give some other creators a break. So
speaking of the community, I mean, you're at cons quite a bit throughout the year, right? How is that for you? I mean, I've seen you at a couple cons and the lines you have are pretty awesome. So what's that experience like to go to a con and talk to these stories about people, like, you know, how turtles changed their life or it was such a big part of their life? I mean, it's got to be awesome.
Honestly, it's sheer heaven. And it's amazing. You know, it's the fact that, you know, my joke is always like, you know, when I go to convention, you see, you know, 100 people in line and I go and I say, you know, I wouldn't stand in line to see me. I'm pretty great. I thank him. I said basically the only way, the only reason I'm sitting behind this table signing autographs is because you guys put me here, and I wouldn't have the living that I have. I wouldn't be able to get up and draw comic books every day like I do without the fan base that we have. So Courtney and I get a great deal of enjoyment going on the shows, meeting families, meeting, you know, original fans that, you know, late 20s, early 30s somethings that tell you that, you know, they wore the Michelangelo turtle costume for three Halloween in a row.
Yep. Or
they bring up their favorite turtle action figure that's been, I always call it well-loved. It's something that the dog chews.
Discolored.
These years.
Yeah.
But it's sort of that coupled with, you know, with the relaunch of what Nickelodeon's done with the 2012 series and some of the new movies, which are what they are, but it's like discovering a whole new generation of fans is as exciting as seeing the original fans that put us here.
Yeah, for sure.
So fast forwarding a couple decades, IDW takes over Turtles, and you come back and work with them on this. How did it feel to come back to a property after so long and kind of take the reins again?
Well, what was fantastic was, you know, it was, the Turtles were never that far away, you know, even when, you know, so you know, I own Heavy Metal Magazine. I'm still a publisher of Heavy Metal Magazine. I would still be active in cons and doing stuff, and I'd be around. And the Turtles were never that far from whatever I was doing, but that I wasn't actively working on them. Mm-hmm. My friends, Scott Dunbier and Ted Adams and Robbie Robbins had gotten a license from Viacom. They invited me down to visit with Tom Waltz, who was the head writer of all things Turtles, and wanted to hear. They wanted my sort of blessing on what he was thinking about doing and with the direction he wanted to take him. And I fell in love with every aspect of his concept of, you know, where he wanted to start the Turtles, his sort of setting the reset button with, you know, homage to the black and white Turtles, the different Turtle universes, whether it be the 2000 series or the original animated series. And he had built this whole new platform to tell stories from. And I really got so excited that I kind of inserted myself into the crazy and have been there for almost 100 issues. We're actually issue 100 is coming out this November, and yep. You know, by the way, Tom's written every one of them, but I've had the best time working on the plotting, the stories, the writing, artwork, working on working with some of the artists that are drawing, you know, from Mateus Santucolo to Dan Duncan to Corey Smith to David Walkner, the guys that are bringing these stories to life. It gives me such energy that it's been nothing but an absolute gift, and I've had the best time ever.
So you have also been doing the covers for Batman and TMNT, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. I mean, how fun is it to have that crossover with such an iconic character?
Well, it was amazing that, you know, I'd actually, the evolution was kind of funny, as I pitched DC Comics the idea of doing a Turtles Commandy crossover, because I'm such a
kid. Oh, yeah.
And they were like, Turtles and Commandy? Who cares about Commandy these days?
Yeah.
That's
a tough character.
Turtles and Batman. And I never thought Turtles Batman was on the table, but it was like, holy shit. I mean, I'm a huge Batman fan. That was like, you know, my trifecta was, you know, Daredevil, Captain America, and Batman is my favorites growing up as a kid.
Yep.
So fortunately, the incredible James Tynion came on board to write it. The equally incredible Freddie Williams came on as the artist.
Yep.
And it was one of those crossovers that could have just as easily failed as succeeded. Mm-hmm. But what James and Freddie did with it, and the fans really, really went all the way there. It was such a great story, and we had a great time. So we did, you know, series two, and then the Batman animated crossover thing, and then that evolved into the last 2 years we've been working on a Batman Turtles animated movie, which is just out now.
Yep.
And we're deep in series three of Batman Turtles. But the first issue, I think, just shipped 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. But we're already. I was actually literally before you called. I was working on designs for the cover of the fifth issue. So.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. probably like such a insanely incredible geek out moment for me.
Yeah.
The day that, you know, going back years now, the day that I was sitting there drawing Turtles and Batman.
Yeah.
Cover going like, they're not really going to publish this. They're really- I'll send it in and they'll go, oh, we were just, you know,
it's funny. I mean, I remember being in the comic shop when we had the previews and we saw that and we're like, this is genius. Like, why hasn't this happened before? And here we are 3 installments later.
Well, you know, thank goodness for, you know, IDW and DC teaming up, because it's been a blast. And I think that, you know, it's been so much fun in that some of the seeds that James planted in series one, mm-hmm. not knowing that ever be a series three, we're now sort of, it's all there, and it's going to be, it's pretty epic. So I think, so guys, cool. I think everybody's going to dig it.
Yeah. Awesome.
So before we move on to the new stuff, I have to finish a long time comic shop argument.
Sure.
When IDW took over Turtles, they decided to reprint your original stories with color. What is your opinion of them coloring your old artwork?
Well, you know, what's you know, they're not the first. I mean, we did what I thought was interesting of what IDW wanted to do, because I want to say first and foremost, some of the collections, I mean, not some of, I think all of the collections that IDW has done have been just wonderfully produced and brilliant. And, you know, from the oversight hardcovers of reprinting the original black and white series with, you know, all the annotations and behind the scenes, yep. the little snippets and factoids and stuff.
Those are what I have. Those are great.
Oh, they're so much fun. And they've gone through, like, you know, all the Tales series and even the Archie series and some of that stuff. But when we did the original color, Turtles comics were published by First Comics back in 86, 87, and 88. They'd really not been reprinted or published since then. And so when IDW wanted to color them, they wanted to try something unique and color them with a duo shade attack. And so it was fun to us to see that version and be able to say, you know, you get this sort of straddle both sides of the fence. Is you get the original black and white ones that are they've already done for the people that want them, and people that, you know, may have not known they were originally published in black and white can see the color ones. But it's been a fun experiment going through all those. It's neat to see in both ways.
Cool. Awesome.
So you were telling us right before we started recording that you have a new graphic novel coming out. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Sure. Yes, it's actually we did it. We started it as a Kickstarter last August. It's a series called Drawing Blood, and it's kind of a I guess the part of the log line or the spin pitch would be it's kind of a Spinal Tap meets kind of Breaking Bad kind of
sold
Armageddon sort of take on a character that. Is a creator that's all the whole story takes place in the world of comic books. It's called Drawing Blood, and it's the journey of this character Shane Bookman, who created with his brother the radically rearranged Ronin Ragdolls, this series of three samurai cats that were raised above a sushi restaurant in Queens. Awesome. Had a huge amount of success, did the rock star thing, got a little crazy in a sense, kind of lost his mojo. So going between ex-wives, gangsters, you name it, everything that could go wrong 10 years after his creation is sort of bottomed out. He's trying to find his path back to creativity. So we, David Avalone and I, the co-creator in the series, we put this guy, Shane Bookman, through some paces. And so we raised the money to do a 4-issue miniseries, and it's coming out as a comic next Wednesday, the 22nd. So it'll be... one of 4 issues starts next Wednesday. We get not only issue one of Drawing Blood, but issue one of the recreation of the 1992 published radically rearranged Ronin Ragdoll's comic. it's all in universe, it's all in parody, and it's all
that's awesome.
Call
it a completely fictional true story.
Who's publishing Drawing Blood?
I am.
Oh, so it's just going through you on through Diamond?
Yes, yeah. It was. I decided that, you know, after 35 years, you know, the Turtles started as a self-publishing project back in May of 1984, 35 years ago. And when, thanks to the fans that supported it on our Kickstarter campaign, we raised the money to create all the artwork for the 5 issues, 4 Drawing Blood issues, and the 1 Ragdolls issue. And so that's going to be our launch point to self-publish again. So I'm going to be self-publishing the 1st issues, and the idea being the success of those will hopefully fund the rest of the series, which we envision as a 12-issue series to complete the first arc of this character's journey into insanity.
Oh, that's awesome. So everybody out there, you go to your comic shops this Wednesday, make sure you pick those up. The Drawing Blood sounds amazing.
Yep.
And Kevin, if for some reason one of our listeners has not found you on the internet, where's the best place to send them?
tell them, you know, we have our main website, my main fan page is basically KevinEastmanStudios.com. Pretty easy. And that list, that's everything there. That's sort of the hub, the focal point. It lists conventions we're doing, like we're going to be in Arizona in a couple of weeks, and we start in Las Vegas for a show, and then of course San Diego Comic Con and many more, Montreal. But you can list all the show schedules, t-shirts, stuff for sale, prints, original art, all things Kevin, all things Turtles, and all things Kevin Eastman projects like Drawing Blood and other things they're doing, you can find them all on KevinEastmanStudios.com.
Awesome.
Well, it's awesome. Thanks, man, for being on the show. We really appreciate it, and it goes without saying, but welcome back anytime.
Thanks, Kevin. I had an absolute blast talking to you. Yeah, let's circle back and talk some more. Let's get some fan reaction to Drawing Blood, and maybe we can come back and talk some more about the finer points of that or something.
And we are back.
Damn
indeed. I am really excited. I want to check out this Drawing Blood that he's got coming out.
Yeah,
I already pre-ordered one from my local retailer, so check that out when you go to the shops Wednesday. And read more Turtles, because Turtles are awesome.
Yeah they are. I can't argue that. All right, now we're gonna get to the comic news.
Comics.
DC, the Batman versus Ra's al Ghul is coming this August from Neil Adams. How do you feel about that with Neil Adams?
I'm not a big Neil Adams guy.
Me either.
I like Neil Adams' older stuff, especially his Green Lantern and Green Arrow. Mm-hmm. Stuff he puts out now, not a fan. But for people that are a fan, good for them. And good for Neil Adams to continue working.
Yeah, he did that Justice League run. I wasn't a huge fan either. Wildcats return. Wow. This August from Warren Ellis and Ramon Villalobos. That's pretty interesting. That's a weird property comeback, I guess. Wildcats.
Well, he's been doing a book. I'm going to forget the name of it. That was like a prequel to this for a few
years. Was it Stormwatch? That one?
It might be.
Yeah.
I forget. I tried it out and I didn't like it. But Wildcats were always something that I try out because, I don't know, they're basically a bunch of Marvel ripoffs. So.
Right. Yeah.
That's probably why I did kind of like them. But we'll see. Warren Ellis. Yeah.
I'll probably check it out. Why not? Marvel, Future Foundation is going to return this August from Jeremy Whiteley and artist Will Robson.
Will Robson, former guest of the show.
Yeah.
Not a big fan of Future Foundation, but
what is Future Foundation?
The children of the Fantastic Four.
Oh, the FF.
Yeah, so the only Future Foundation stuff I really liked was Hickman's run, and that's because it's Hickman, and and he knows how to weave a story really well. So, and it went along with his Fantastic Four run, where this is its own thing. But it's going to look pretty, because I love Will Robson's art. I really do.
Yeah, got to get him back on the show. We'll talk to him about it. Spider-Man Velocity announced for August from writer Dennis Hallam and artist Emilio Lasso. It is the sequel to the Spider-Man PS4 game. That was pretty cool, I guess.
Yeah, so that explains why they did a basically shot-for-shot redo and
redo, right. Okay.
Well, yeah.
Speaking of Jonathan Hickman, he confirms that House of X and Power of X are an X-Men relaunch. He will be helming the main X-Men book after, with others to be announced. Wow. Hold on. So that first part of the news is like, he's coming back to X-Men.
Well, that's been a thing for, we've known that for a while.
No, I mean, but he's going to be doing the ongoing, but then they're canceling all the current X-Men books.
Yeah, so he did
crap.
He did an interview recently, and he basically said, like, I convinced Marvel to cancel the entire X-Men line.
That's nuts.
And
that is crazy.
It is and it isn't, because Marvel cancels the X-Men line every like 6 years or so.
Yeah.
But this is, he's touting it as like a big a change as Grant Morrison's X-Men. So,
wow.
We'll see. All I know is I'm going to be reading X-Men for a few years now.
Yeah.
But I hope that, my hope is, he's taking over the main X-Men book. So whatever that is, the X-Men number one is going to be Jonathan Hickman. And then he's probably going to take on a second book. Maybe X-Force, maybe Uncanny, maybe just Wolverine or something. Who knows? But it seems like it seems like these two miniseries are made to set up a whole new X-Men status quo moving forward, and he's going to have a team working on a bunch of different books to build that. So I'm excited because Jonathan Hickman's writing comics for Marvel again. So.
Yeah, I might pick that up too, just because he's such a great writer. Dynamite announces Death Defying for this August from writer Gail Simone and artist Walter Giovanni. So it's a probably creator owned.
No, it's part of that Dynamite Superpowers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Gail Simone's a good writer.
Yeah. Yeah, that's she's got a pretty big fault. She's got a pretty big following too, so.
Yeah, I like that Superpowers mini they did. I think it was like 9 issues a while back, but I haven't read anything other than that from that, so.
I'm excited for this news. Oni Press announces another Rick and Morty versus Dungeons and Dragons. Painscape is a four issue miniseries coming from Jim Zub and Troy Little this August. Sold.
Yep.
Jim Zub's a great writer. This property was so much fun last series with Patrick Rothfuss. I wish this would become... Actually, I like this. Every four issues, like a new writer, a new take on their dungeon module or something.
Well, you forget, Jim Zub was also on that book. It was co-written by Jim Zub.
Oh, I didn't know. Oh, okay. It was co-written by him? That's right.
So okay. Jim Zub's been doing the proper Dungeons & Dragons books, so that's why he kind of jumped in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm still excited.
I'm super excited. I love that first run.
Yeah. And then we got what we read this week. Comics! I'll just start off with Batman 71. You know how I thought my disappointment was, over?
Yeah.
Well, lo and behold, still don't know what the hell's going on. On one hand, Batman is he lights the red bat signal and he assembles all the Robins. And then they show Batman in Wayne Manor, and Alfred is staying there and Bane's just hanging out at his kitchen or his dinner table.
Is he naked?
No. Oh yeah, he might be still. Yeah, I think he was. And he's talking to him there, but then he's talking to everyone on the rooftop, and the Batman are in two different costumes. And then he gets to, he brings the Robins to the roof, and he says oh yeah, Bane is out and we got to catch him. And all the villains are out of Arkham, and it ends with him walking into Arkham and nobody's there. And they're like, what are you talking about? The villains are all in their cells. And then, he punches Alfred in the face in the other scene. And it was I don't know what's going on. Or no, he doesn't punch Alfred in the face. He punches Robin in the face. They're I don't know. I think they're just trying to show Batman's going crazy, but now I'm just even more confused.
Yeah. It sounds like he's just going crazy.
Yeah. But I didn't need this for 10 issues to find out that he's going crazy. You know what I mean? The crazy Batman is okay, Batman's going crazy, give him Batman Zur-En-Arr. That's the crazy Batman I like. The Grant Morrison Zur-En-Arr Batman with the purple yellow suit. Don't give me this weird headspace Batman. Not liking it. Anyways, we'll talk about a great book that came out this week, though. Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes.
Number 5? 4? I think it was 5.
It is 5.
Yeah, talk about that.
So basically, one, Lockjaw comes back.
Yeah, that was a great scene.
So you read Death of Inhumans, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, Donny Cates connects back to Death of Inhumans. They did last year, and Lockjaw reappears. They end up going to find Gamora, and they find out that Thanos really did have a plan to resurrect himself. Hela is involved. And everybody kind of went right along with it. He basically predicted that everybody was going to do what they were going to do. Mm-hmm. And that was going to lead to his resurrection. It was really creepy to see him take over his brother.
Which I don't know. They didn't really explain how he does it, right? The magic behind it.
No, you're just kind of expected to go with it.
They're just I've been reborn. That's
yeah. Okay. But yeah, Thanos is back.
Yeah.
The long and short of it is Thanos is back. But I thought it was a really good issue.
Not as jacked as he used to be, though. Not as intimidating.
Well, I'm wondering if we're going to get Franken Thanos, because his body was there kind of put together again.
And so, like, he takes over the brother's body and, like, then uses his brain or something? I don't know.
It's going to be weird, though.
That's, yeah, it's been good. That was pretty cool to see, and then we get Lockjaw at the end of it, and it was awesome seeing Lockjaw again.
Yeah, and also it looks like Hela might have killed Cosmic Ghost Rider.
Yeah, or at least hurt him pretty badly.
Yeah.
Which is like, that kind of sucks. Or maybe it was just like Donnie was done with the character, wanted to put it to rest for a while. I don't know. Who knows? Yeah, what else did I read this week?
Did you read Justice League number 24?
Yeah, Justice League number 24. That was next on the list. I really like this issue. We know that last issue, Batman betrayed the League and sacrificed our Superman in what he thought was in trade for to save Earth, basically, or save the universe. Well, we see kind of like Batman in this weird space. It's almost like he's like in purgatory or something, where like he has this old memory of him and his son, and he's trying to like grasp on something to get out of the darkness.
You mean Superman?
Superman, I'm sorry. Get himself out of the darkness, while we still see Batman and the World Forger just chilling, still talking, having a good time. You see him like still going through with the plan. He's like, I knew you were the most logical, Batman. He's kind of like buttering him up, like, I knew you would see my way because you're the smartest of them. And Batman's like, God damn right I am. And then we get to see, you know, the new Legion of Doom as they rescue the Justice Leaguers and run away from Lois Lane.
Yeah, and we get the final Batman suit.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. So the issue kind of ends where the League is like being stopped from saving the Earth, and the future League comes to stop them, and Batman comes to stop them in this giant god, Bat God suit.
So I feel like it's 100% going to happen that Batman is using the suit against the World Forger.
You think so?
I think so. There's no way Batman went bad.
Maybe it's like a Doctor Strange thing where like there's 14 million choices and only one of them is going to save the actual multiverse. I don't know.
Scott Snyder was just watching Infinity War
while he was finishing the script.
No, I think this is all a con just to get to that, so that he could know what World Forger wanted him to do and then use that against World Forger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess that makes sense. That's a Batman thing to do.
That is a Batman thing.
Be the hero. Yeah, but it's really good.
Yeah.
It's a great book right now. And then I had Kick-Ass come out. I haven't read that yet, though.
All right, so I had War of the Realms number 4. Big, big issue, especially since we get Odin in an Iron Man suit.
Yes. What?
And all of the different strike forces have come back and completed their task. So, and with all that, they're all sitting around trying to figure out how they're going to save Midgard, and then we get the return of Thor, and Thor comes out. He lost his arm fighting frost giants, and he decided he was going to rip off the arm of the Devastator and use that as his own.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Nice.
Fantastic issue, and the ending is really great, and War of the Realms has been fantastic. I mean, we had one like issue that was kind of meh, but I think that was last issue, and that one was to set up some of these ancillary miniseries going on.
What they need to do is cut off his other arm so he gets two Devastator arms, and then he's basically Jax from Mortal Kombat. Now that would be awesome.
Oblivion Song number 15.
Oh, yeah, that's been going on.
We got these we got these interdimensional aliens. We find out that there's, in the last issue, we found out there's these people walking around without faces. Mm-hmm. And we don't know what they are. Well, now we find out they're hostile because they're attacking people. Oh. And it's Nate's job to go back and try to save everyone. It's been a pretty good book. This time jump's been a little confusing because Nate was in jail for a bit, and now they let him free because they found out that all the different plant life over there actually had healing effects and was able to heal like major diseases and everything. Mm-hmm. So there's a whole operation, but he's kind of trying to find his place. And of course his place is to be the jumper that goes over to this other dimension. Star Wars TIE Fighters, number 2.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. There's a rogue faction of the Empire that's taken over this planet.
Oh.
And they aren't rebels, but they're not Empire anymore. They just kind of want to get rich and be left alone. And our squadron is down there with them and given a choice to either die or join them. They choose to join them. And surprise, they don't really join them. They start killing people.
They kill them because they're because you got to remain loyal to the Emperor. What the hell?
Yeah, because, you know, Emperor Palpatine knows all. Superman, number 11.
Oh, yeah, I got to read that, too.
Long and short of it is we find out what was going on with that battle with Jor-El. We find out how all the characters exit the Phantom Zone, spoiler alert, and what was the ending? And yeah, there's a big fight between Superman and this ugly dude that killed Krypton, and oh, the big reveal at the end is that Supergirl is involved somehow.
What?
And then Port of Earth number 10. So one of our characters here has infiltrated the port and she gets caught. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things going on here. Like there, we find out that some of the trading that's going on in the port is intergalactic slave trading. And there's a whole faction of humans that are trying to stop it. We get somebody who infiltrated, she gets caught trying to catch a criminal and bad things are going to happen there. Port of Earth is really good. Everybody needs to check that out. It's one of those books that's just awesome. And then my final book is actually a novel.
Oh, what?
I read The Oracle Year by Mr. Charles Soule.
Oh, wow.
Charles Soule, known for a lot of Marvel work, especially Wolverine and most importantly, Daredevil. It's a really good read. It's a quick read. It's one of those books that I've probably been reading it for over a month now, but it's because I'll read a couple chapters, put it down for a week, and then read a couple chapters and put it down for a few days, and then so on and so forth. But it's a good read. It's a simple read. But the story really, it goes through this character who gets these predictions that he ends up finding out come true. And through that, he creates this website and puts them out there, which makes him super famous, except for the fact that he doesn't reveal his name. And this gets the attention from governments and corporations and everything. He becomes rich and everything goes to shit. So I recommend it for the first attempt at a novel. I think Charles Soule did a great job. Mm-hmm. Surprise, surprise, he can write. And I understand why this isn't a comic and it's a novel. There's not a whole lot of action going on. It's a lot of like thriller type stuff. A lot of political intrigue, a lot of manhunt detective stuff. So if you like that type of thing, check it out. I really enjoyed it.
Awesome.
Speaking of enjoying things, Mike.
Oh, wow.
Where can people find you on the internet?
I don't know if you'll enjoy that, but you can find me at Fortress Ricker on Twitter. Where can they find you and or the show?
Well, they can find me at Fortress Chris on Twitter, and they can find the show at FCN_official or at FortressComicNews.com, where everything we do is right there on that handy-dandy website. Remember, everybody, if you're listening to us, to give us a review on iTunes or whatever podcatcher you use, and if you are watching us, to thumb up, subscribe, comment, and share our glorious podcast. And if you feel like we've done an even spectacular job at doing the podcasting, go to patreon.com/fortunecomicnews, where just a dollar will get you my other podcast, the Bat Friends podcast, 3 days early, as well as other little perks as we grow over there. And then you guys also know, if you're on fortunecomicnews.com, there's the banner at the top for Amazon, amazon.com. Click on that, buy stuff, and I can help pay some of my student loans. So, Mike, I've talked enough. I'm done.
All right. Well, I guess I'm done too then. See you, everyone.
Bye, everybody, and see you next week.